Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi Vava Metzia Kuf Hey. We are holding right on the top V'Amar Rava, continuing where we left off on the topic of an Iska. So an Iska is a business transaction which was structured, it's like an investment, which was structured as a part loan and part deposit. So basically you give, Reuven gives Shimon $100 and asks him to invest it, or it would seem from Rashi this was primarily done with merchandise. So basically he gives him $100 of merchandise, sell it off, and then reinvest the dividends and manage the fund for let's say a year, at which end we will sit down and do the balance sheet. And as we explained yesterday, based on Rashi, in order to avoid any ribbis, so we have to compensate Shimon, he's like the fund manager, looking after Reuven's portion as well. Right? Only half of this 100 belongs to Shimon, is like a loan to Shimon, which makes sense why he's looking after it. The other half, the other 50, belongs to Reuven. It's like a deposit. So why is Shimon endeavoring to bring Reuven profits on his half? The answer is because Reuven is paying him for it. How is he paying him for it? Because Reuven is accepting upon himself half of the losses corresponding to his part of the fund, but he is willing to accept less than half if there are profits. He's only taking a third of the profits. So that circumvents any ribbis concerns, because basically Shimon is not being compensated for his efforts. And that's the root of the whole, the source of the whole Heter Iska, arrangement that we do today. It's based on this idea that, the fellow is really just like a fund manager and being compensated for his efforts, and it allows him to provide returns to the investor. V'omer Rava, says Rava like this, Haiman de kavel iska min chavrei v'faset. So Shimon accepted this deal, right? He's looking after this the fund, and lost money. So he didn't inform Reuven at the time. Rather, Torah Humalia, he went all out and he reinvested and he worked very hard to refill that loss. Okay, now it's back up to 100. Lo yoide, right? He didn't inform. He never told Reuven about this episode. So at the end of the day, lo yimatzi amarle, Shimon can't turn to Reuven and say, "Look, dori mahech pseida bahadoi." Remember, we started at 100. It dropped to 50. So essentially, there was a $50 loss. And you're supposed to be taking half of that, right? You take half of any loss. So take off 25. So now you only get back 75 from the original, amount. And although I now brought it back up to 100, so that 50, which I have profited, is profit. It's not just considered a reinstatement of the original amount. There was a $50 loss, of which you take $25 because you get half the losses. And now there was a $50 gain, $50 profit, of which you only get to take a third. That's the deal. You only get a third of the profits. So essentially, you're going to get less than 100. 92 and change, right? Or something like that. So can he do that? No. Lo matzi amrle. He can't tell him, Dari, carry, accept upon yourself, ma'ech pseida badoi, a portion of this loss with me. And the other is considered profit, from which you only take a third. You can't do that, because Reuven tells him, you know why you endeavor to go refill this loss and get us back on track without telling me? It was for your own benefit. So the people don't refer to you as Mafsid Iski, one who mismanages funds. So basically, it was to your gain and benefit to ignore the loss, and you were basically Meichel me. Right, so yeah, it's basically back up to square one. There's no loss, there's no gain. In which case, I get back my 100. Now we have two fund managers. So they took money from Reuven, right? So now Shimon and Levi are meant to, invest this money and try to earn a profit on Reuven's money, based on this, Iska arrangement. But they're both sort of joint fund managers. V'rabach, and the investment bore fruit, there is profit. V'amar li'chad l'chavrei, and now Shimon turns to Levi, and he says, look, Ta Liflik, come, let's go split it up. You know, I want out. We're doing well. I want to just split up. Could he do that? No. I Amar Le Idach. So if Levi, the partner, responds, Nirvach Tvei, let's stick around longer together and, you know, we'll make more money. Money brings money, right? Din Hu Dema'akev, yeah. So Levi can stand in his way. And the reason is as follows. The Bach takes out the Vav, and the following is merely like an explanation as to why each partner could hold back the other one from walking off the deal. So let's say Shimon asks for half his profit. He says, you know, by the way, the Mefarshim explain that apparently the Baal HaBayis, the investor, is not involved anymore because he got his portion already. Some Mefarshim, Rabbi Yonason says, I was speaking that there was some interesting arrangement where the investor was only going to get up to, you know, a certain amount of profit. And they got to that point already. So going forward, until the end of the year, until the end of the term that was stipulated, it's basically Shimon and Levi's business. Okay, so now let's say he says, Havli palga d'rafcha, I want half my profits. I'm not going to ask you for the actual principle, but just give me half my profits. Amar le rafcha l'karna mishtabed. Levi could respond by saying, look, the profits are bound to the principle, meaning the more there is in the fund, the greater the potential for investment and for making more money and for offsetting any losses. I don't want to give you anything right now. Okay, so Shimon says, look, so provide me half my profits and also half of the actual principal. Let's really split it up and we go our own separate ways. We have two separate funds. Okay, so to this, Levi can respond and say, look, no, this is one deal, it's one package deal. All these monies are sort of bound to each other, committed to each other. The more money there is, the more we can offset any potential losses and regain our footing, right? So the first request was just, let me take my profit. He says, no, maybe we're going to lose money. And this way, having more money around allows us to regain our footing. The same thing with the second argument. Okay, if you omale nifle grafcha, nifle karna. Let's say Shimon says, look, you're fine, I got it. So let's just split everything. If you must look say the unconditioned, if there's any loss on your end, the rina badach, I'll take responsibility with you on that. So you're not going to lose by, you know, bailing me out. I'll bail you out. You're not losing by me opting out. Omale so Levi said, like, no, I'm not interested. Mazlo, why? Mazlo debate trade other. If two people together have a greater mazl, and I want you with me until the year is up. Continues Mishnah. So Rashi explains, this Mishnah is going on a chaycher, right? A fellow who's working in the fields for the sake of the farmer, and he's providing a flat rate, 100 bushels a year to the farmer. Now he's working the field, but he's not interested in being menachish, and weeding out, you know, the weeds. And he tells the owner, what difference does it make to you? I mean, why do you care? At the end of the day, I'm going to give you the 100 bushels. What do you care from leaving the weeds? We don't accept this argument. Because the owner can tell him, I understand, but, you know, lemachar, in a year from next month, you're gone, right? Now, while you're leaving, you're leaving the field. And guess what? I'm going to be left with a field growing weeds. That's not fair. It says the Gemara, what if the sharecropper tells the owner, look, after I finish harvesting, I'm going to really overturn all the soil. You'll get a good weeding there. So the owner can say, no, I want good quality wheat to begin with. And that only happens when you weed those weeds out during the growing season, right? What you can do later is not helpful for the actual grain growing today. Okay, so the fellow says, I'm going to purchase chitim for you from the marketplace, so you'll get the best quality. So you can say, I'm not interested. I want my own locally grown produce. I want my chitim for my land. It's personal, right? He wants it. So he says, look, so the Shimon, the worker, can say, look, Okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to weed out just that corner of the field, which is going to provide for your portion of this harvest, right? That's fine, right? Amrele, so the owner can tell him, look, I'm not interested. You know why? Because kamansibas shemra laroi, you're going to put my farm on a blacklist. You're going to give me a bad reputation. When people see later on that there is weeds growing out of my field, nobody's going to want to buy it or deal with it. So that's why you can object to this type of, v'atnan. But the Mishnah says that his argument is a bit different. We're giving all kinds of responses, but in the Mishnah it seems to be pretty clear that he's just saying, look, in the future, malas, it's going to produce weeds. That seems to be his main argument. Elo says, Gemara, you're right. That's the main point. Because the owner can tell the farmer, look, Bizra the Nuffle Nuffle, once the weed, seeds drop into the ground during the growing season, even though you're going to overturn the soil at the end of the season, it's too late because the seeds that are embedded in the ground are not visible now. They're going to sprout forth later on when you're gone, and I'm going to be stuck with them. So therefore, you can insist that it does a proper weeding process during the growing season. Says the next Mishnah. So here Rashi says the Mishnah is referring to a true Makabel. So he's committed to develop the field with a percentage arrangement, right? So he gives a portion of the produce to the owner and keeps the rest. So what happened? He started working, and it was not really a successful season. And the field did not really produce. And the farmer says, look, it's not worth my while. I want to move out. Does he have to continue? Does he have to get to the finish line? So the answer is like this. If there's enough produce there that can potentially produce a pile of grain can be formed from it, so that is enough to force the farmer, the sharecropper, to stay on the job. What kind of measure is this, a kri? I mean, a pile, okay, but what size field are we speaking of? A small field, a huge field, right? So according to Rabbi, that's not really a proper determination. Rather, it's about whether there is enough grain that's going to be harvested from this field that can actually provide enough seeds to replant that same field. So this is, field size oriented, and that's why it's going to be the determining factor. Tana Rabbanan, Hamakabel Sada Mechaber. Okay, so he's working, and there's no produce there. Im Yesh Bo Kedei Lamed Kri, Chayav L'Tavol Bo. There's enough there for a Kri, he's got to stay on the job. Why? Shekach Kosev Leib, because remember, that's what he committed to him in writing. Ana Oikim, I'm going to, come forth, Ve'anir, and plow, Ve'ezra, and plant, Ve'echt Soit, and cut, Ve'amir, and bundle, Ve'edosh, and thresh, Ve'edrian, Ve'nu, Ve'oikim, Kari, Kadamach, and present you with a pile of grain. Okay, so if there's a pile, he's got to do it. V'teisi'ant, and he continues to tell the owner in writing, right, this was his commitment, V'teisi'ant, and you'll come along, V'titol, Pali, you'll take half the crop, whatever they made up, Vana, and myself, Ba'moli, because of my efforts, Banafkas Yodi, because of my expenses, Palga, I'll also take the other half. So that's why, if there's a potential for a Kri, he's got to stay on the job. V'kamo k'dei lahamed bo Kri. Now, what is considered a Kri? Amar b'yesi, Rav Chanina, k'dei shetamoid bo harachas. Oh, he gives us a very specific, shear. The pile has to be big enough so that you can, when you stick the rachas, the pitchfork, into that pile, it sort of gets stuck into it. It stays standing. That's how big the pile has to be. Iboyed with the questions like this. Rachas hayoytzim haygisa maygisa mai. So the pitchfork is like sort of a wide, fork. So you have a small pile, and you stick the pitchfork in, and you still see it, it's like sticking out on both edges. Is that okay? Or does it have to be fully covered by that pile to be considered? Toshma, here comes a rai. Amar bavo. Lididi, Mifashal Mine, the Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, it was explained to me from him, whether directly or indirectly, and he explained, Kol Shein Koines Shaloi Roya Pnei Hacham, it must be that the Koines Shaloi, like the sort of the bottom, the fork part, is not exposed to the sun. It basically means to say it has to be fully covered. So how much is that in terms of volume? Itmar, Levi, Amar, Levi says shalosh sin, three saw of grain. Tvei Rabbi Yanai Amri, the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yanai, they gave a different shir of sayim. Amar Shlokas, you should know, so sayim shomer, when they spoke about so sayim, chutz minayit saw, that's after you deduct for the expenses. So you end up with two saw. And Rashi explains that on account of this shiur presented by Rabbi Yanai, we're going to move on to many other halachos and mishnayos, which involve Rabbi Yanai's interpretation of a specific volume. It's not awesome. I have a mishnah over there in Maseches Oktzin. You have these inferior quality olives and grapes that don't really, never really ripen properly. Are they considered a fruit with respect to susceptibility to Kabbalah's tuma? Right? Can they become tamei as a fruit? Beishamay metame, they say, yeah, it's sufficiently a fruit and considered oichel. Ubeisil metare, no, it's free of any tuma. It's not considered a proper fruit. My preseizasim, what exactly are these things? Amar Rafuna rishayzasim, the wicked ones, they're not proper ones. Amar Yosef Mikro, what do we find? Term pritze is referring to something, you know, off the beaten track, something abnormal and something, you know, improper. Ubnei pritze amcha yinosu l'hamad chazer nechshalu. There will be these outcasts from your nation, Klal Yisrael, they're going to try to, you know, present their false vision, they're going to fail. And actually, it's a reference to the Esav's crowd. That's one pshat, Rashi, and the Metzudos there says it's going on the wicked of Klal Yisrael itself. Yeah. Rav Nachman Beit Zalkam Amihachu has another source for this. Bahoyle ben Parash Shefech Dam. That we see that a Shefech Dam, a Rasha, a murderer is called a Parash. Okay. Kama Pritze Zeisen. Now we understand these aren't really, you know, good quality fruit, but you know, at what point are they considered Pritze Zeisen? How little oil are they producing? Rav Lazar Omar Arba'as Kamen L'Koira. So Koira is that, you know, crushing beam, right? So they would fill the olive press, right, to capacity with olives beneath the Koira. And if that press, right, that squeeze can produce 4 kav of oil, right, and not more, so it's considered pritze. It's not, you know, these aren't properly producing grape olives, and they qualify as pritzim. Three times as much, two sa'ah of juice from a single, you know, run. But there really isn't a machlekas here because they're speaking about different locations. Depends how much you put into the press to begin with, right? The first shita is going where they put a kur, right, in one run, in one, you know, receptacle there. Rabbi Yanai was speaking where they used to put 3 times as much, 3 kur. So it's expected to generate 3 times as much material, right? So 2 sa'ah, which is 3 times 4 kav, because a sa'ah 6 kav. So that's how you get to that total. Tana Rabbanan. We have another halacha in Maseches Zavin. So we know that a Zav, who's Tamei, cannot be supported by a Tar, nor can a Tar be supported by him. Otherwise, he becomes Tamei, right? Because Zav transmits Tumah just by way of, you know, leaning on the Tar and vice versa. Suppose a fellow who is Tar, pure, goes with a Zav, who experiences submission and is Tamei, they climb up to this tree, which is a wobbly tree, a weak tree, on this branch which is wobbling. Tamei, so the tar now becomes tamei because we assume that they sort of leaned on each other, and Rashi explains, even though he was 10 feet away, but the fact is, being that this thing is moving up and down, inevitably the weight of either one is sort of leaning on the other as they go up and down, and that's sufficient to transmit tuma. How do we determine a wobbly tree? The tree is not fat enough. Its trunk does not allow to be formed into a roiva, a certain size container of a roiva, a certain size container. So you can't really bore out a roiva hakav, right, in that trunk. It's not big enough for that. So that's considered a weak tree. Hechidami sechashgechara was considered a weak branch. So when you grab it, it sort of gets enwrapped in your hand and is not visible. Another halacha, again with a shear from Rabbi Yanai. A fellow was walking in a place called a Beis HaPras, a field which was plowed over, meaning there was a grave which was plowed over. With Rabbanon, that area is considered tameh, provided you actually touched or moved any small bone chip. So let's say a fellow is walking along in the Beis HaPras. Al gabi avonim shiachal hasitan. He's walking on these wobbly stones. Ala adam balabem, or he's taking a ride on a person or an animal, shkechen ra, who are wobbly. So he's not really insulated from the tumah below, because the animal or the person beneath him is sort of being affected by his weight and moving around by his weight. So he, in effect, is moving the person, who in turn is moving the bone chips. So now the tumah travels up to the person on top. So he's tummy. How do we determine a weak person? So if he's carrying a person piggyback, and his knees are sort of banging to each other, he can't really support his weight. It's called a weak animal. When you sit on it, matila glolim, it lets out waste. They can't really tolerate that weight. Another halacha regarding something pertaining to volume. When it comes to davening or tefillin, there is a shear of four kav pertaining to what? Tefillin mai. What does this mean? Letzani. We learned that price. Hanayisa masyal ksefei. Fellow's carrying a load on his shoulders. Vegia as man tefillin, comes time to daven. Must they remove the load or not? Well, it depends if it distracts him. How do we determine? Pach is medal kavin. If the bag that he's carrying is less than four kav in size, so it's just, by the way, it's not really going to distract him. Afshil and achor, he just slings it behind him. And he proceeds with tefillah. But if it's a large size package, abbas kavin, so it distracts his concentration, maniach agavakaki, puts it down the floor, mispala, and he proceeds to daven. The tefillin mai, how does this question pertain to wearing tefillin? The sound will enter a brisa. Let's say he's carrying a load on his head with his tefillin. Must he remove the load? If it's weighing down on his tefillin, then it's disrespectful, he should remove it. Otherwise, it's okay. What's considered a heavy load which must be removed? Once again, the same idea, a 4 kav volume load. Here's another aspect of this point. If he has waste on his head, with his tefillin, that's not respectful. He has to remove his tefillin, but he has to be careful. He shouldn't just shift his tefillin to the side and keep it on his head. On the other hand, nor should he tie it around his waist. It's disrespectful to the tefillin. Rather, should take off the tefillin shal yarosh. And guess what? Tie it and place it right next to the tefillin shal yad on his arm. And that's a good, respectful place. There's a different shita. Reb Shila says that it's not about a large size load. Even a small, teeny load is not respectful for a tefillin. Afilu mitpachas. Even the tefillin bag, you would think that's okay. They put on his head with his tefillin. No, also laniach al roish sheyesh by tefillin. But kama, so according to Rav Shila, so Rav Yana, we know 4 kav is an issue. Less is not a problem. According to Rav Shila, what's the issue? How much is a problem? Amar Abai, even a teeny amount. Afilu riba de riba de bimbadisa, even a quarter of a litra, a really teeny small amount. Of a load is a problem, and it would seem from the Gemara there's no limit. Basically, anything is an issue. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, my kids for bekri, hello im yesh bagdei nefila. Okay, so this is back to the Mishnah. A fellow refuses to finish the job. He says it's not worth my while. So, contra Rabbi Yehuda, well, if this field has potential to still produce enough seeds that can be replanted, that can replant the field for next season, then he's obligated to finish the job. Let's have an exact volume amount on that. Rabbi Ami Omar, Rabbi Yechanon, he calls Rabbi Yechanon Arba Se'in, according to the Igra, it's Arba Kamen, Likur. So you have an area called a base Kur, Rashi says 50 Amma by 1500 Amma, which is about, I guess, 75,000 square Amma, right? So this type of field needs four kav or four saw, depending on the Gersa, for replanting. So that's the shear. Okay, and proportionately, based on the size of this field that we're dealing with. Rabbi Ami Delay Amar, Rabbi Ami himself disagreed. He said, Amar Shmoinas sin the kur, a greater amount, eight per kur, and prorated according to the current field size. Amar Lei Yahusava, the Ravchon, Breda Rabba, Bravo. Asbel, I'll explain to you why, according to Rabbi Yechanan, you need less than the other Shita. It depends on the quality of the land. In the time of Rabbi Yechanan, Shneid Rabbi Yechanan's days, earlier on in history, Hava Shmeina Ara. The land was more fertile and needed less seeds to get it going. But later on, during Rabbi Ami's days, the land got weaker and needed more seeds. Then Hossam, we have another Mishnah over there in Meseches Peya, which ties into our discussion. So here comes along a strong wind and blows away the bundles. Before the poor people got a chance to pick up their take, the leket, the shikha, etc. Oimdim oisa, what do we do now? So we have to make an evaluation. We sit down, we estimate, oimdim oisa, kama leket rui lasois, how much leket is typically found in such a field, and that's what he gives, v'nois and lanim, gives it to the poor people. Rabban Shimon, bring up a little imer. No, I'll give you a set amount. You don't have to sit and praise. There is a predetermined set amount for this. Nois and lanim k'dei nefila, gives them k'dei nefila. What is that? The kama k'dei nefila. Right? So basically it means the Rashi says k'dei nipol leket akotzev. Oh. Nefila could have two meanings. Here it means the assumed amount of leket that would have fallen. Nefila means how much would have fallen. Okay? And we have a set amount for that, which actually ties into the other k'dei nefila, which means the amount of seeds needed to replant this field. Okay, so v'kama k'dei nefila, how much is that? Ki asa rav dimi, amar rav elazar, v'tem rav yechon, arbas kaven l'kur. Four kav per every kur. Now, what does this mean? But rav yirmiyah, what do you mean to say? L'kur zera? So, it means four kav is the ratio per kur of seeds, meaning a sada, a field, in which a kur, a huge amount of seeds were needed for planting. So that size field generates four kav of the aniyim, material. So that's one way to look at it. Or the kur tvu. Or does he mean to say the four kav ratio pertains to a field which produced a kur of produce? Now, if you take on the first point that it's based on the amount needed to plant a field, okay. So l'mapolas yad, how are you reckoning? Based on manual planting, in which case the farmer is more sparing, right? He's more careful. Or l'mapolas shvarim, or based on how much you need for planting by way of the animals. They used to take this perforated container and fill it with seeds, and the animals run around, so there's much more waste there. So a kur of animal seed, animal planting, or manual planting. Tashma, so let's figure this out. Tachiasa Ravin, Amar Rebavu, Amar Belazav, Amar Biyachnam, Arbas Kabin, the four kav, pertains to the kur zera, to a kur of seeds needed to plant a field. So basically, a place which needed a core of planting will generate four kaf for the poor people. But when it's still not sure, manual or by way of the automated system, the animal system, take it, we'll leave it unresolved. Okay, we'll leave the rest of Bez Hashem for tomorrow. Let's just recap today's daf. So we started with the iska, right? So the whole iska is considered a package deal. There's no splitting, there's no walking away in the middle. It's all meshubah to each other until the end of the term. A fellow must weed a field that he's working on. He can't just walk away. He's bound to the owner to maintain his field properly. Suppose there's very little being produced this year, that he still has to stay on the job. We have a Shita of Tanakama, which sets the minimum at a Kri, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Kedei Nefila. We had a bunch of Shiurim from Dvir Rabbi Yanai, which pertain to this halacha, or pertains to the halacha of the Zeisim Vanovim, to the halacha of the Zot, Beis HaPras, the Tefillah, and the Tefillin. Okay, all the best to you. Atzlacha Rabbah.